I
annoying.
guess it's for the benefit of those people. It has been said that way for the benefit of the girl, mostly girls, and also boys, because no one would get heartbroken.
Exactly. That's the point. And even another solution for some people, it may help. Some Muslim families also, they try that. And that is the concept of temporary marriage that we have it in Islam. Of course, I mean, our Sunni brothers believe that it is only a Shia concept, but we believe that it's in an Islamic. But anyway, for some families, they say that, okay, this boy and girl, they want to know more each other. And we do not want them to fall in committing sins, so they can be mahram to each other for a couple of weeks, for example, for a couple of months, through this concept of contemporary marriage. So even they may, for example, touch each other, but within the limits, but through that they may come to a kind of more understanding. So this is, of course, this is not suggested for all the people. For some families, they may think that if they recite the contract of temporary marriage, it can help the boy and the girl not to commit any sin. And after, of course, it shouldn't be too long. All the scholars,
Exactly,
they
that's
say
the
it should,
point.
because some people go through this religion for a couple of years, and then, so, I mean, you do not need so much time to come to know each other, to be
It
realistic, of
doesn't take
course.
that long
It
to know a
doesn't.
person.
And at the end of the day, you will not know each other
Exactly.
before marrying
Going
each
under the
other. This
same
is
roof.
exactly, this is a reality. But anyway, this is a solution for some people who want to know each other more and maybe to be away from any kind of sin. But more practically, maybe to, I mean, talk to each other, but within, I mean, with the control of the families. I
Within
think
limits.
within limits, it helps a lot. The next point is that, as I mentioned, Islam is a pro-love religion, and we have so many narrations in this regard. Islam, especially when it comes to the men, I mean the husbands, encourages them a lot to express their love toward their wives. So we shouldn't think that, okay, this is, I mean, Islam is a religion which is against the concept of love. No, this is not the reality. In one tradition, one of the infallible says that, if a man tells his wife that I love you, it will not be removed from her heart at all. So Islam emphasizes on the concept of love
But after marriage.
after marriage, of course. This is one point. And the second point is that love has some, levels. So I believe that if a marriage is based on knowledge, which Islam emphasizes on a lot, then love happens naturally speaking too. Especially if we take into consideration the Islamic advices in this regard. Like for example, saying your feelings, like buying gifts, and so on and so forth. So if a life of the spouses are based on Islamic laws, and before that the marriage is based on knowing each other, on recognition, on cognition and knowledge, I believe that love will also be there, I mean gradually speaking. And of course, I mean, no one can say that this is love and this is not love. It has levels, it has stages. So and of course we need to also say that there are some practical ways for increasing our love. There are some practical ways. For example, in this case, we have some narrations and we have some advices by the psychologists, for example. We need to spend time if we want to have a life based on love. We need to be together, I mean, as
It takes
spouses.
time to buy a heart.
Exactly, that's the point. And to express your love is very important, especially for men out there. Many of them, they are not ready to express their love. Of course, deep in their heart, they love. But Islam says that no, it's not enough. Just express your love.
You
I
have to
mean,
show it.
women like to hear that from you. So to put it in a nutshell, we mentioned that this question somehow is trying to mention that Islam is against the concept of love, and the marriage based on love is guaranteed, but Islam says that there is no way to love each other before marriage. We said that, first of all, is there any guarantee that boyfriends and girlfriends who love each other
end up having
a long life with love? No. In many cases, it doesn't continue
like
that.
They fall into divorce.
Yeah. And we said that Islam puts emphasis on marriage based on knowing each other. And we believe that a marriage based on knowing is much better than a marriage which is only based on love, mm-hmm. without knowing each other. And Islam has many ways for knowing each other, like, as we said, talking under the control of the families and the parents, and in some cases maybe being mahram for a short time. And third, we said that when you get married, Islam has so many ways for advancing love among the spouses, like expressing, like buying gifts, and so on and so forth.
So, as we see, Islam is not against love, but what happens is that it is against forbidden relationships, exactly. which is going to hurt both sides, the girls and the boys. After all, I would say thank you for listening. This was all the time that we had for today. Until another session, I bid you farewell and I leave you to the protection of God.
إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن لعلي وحسين وحسن كل من كان محبا لهم كل من كان محبا لهم يدخل الجنة من غير حزن يدخل الجنة من غير حزن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن علي Operation Cyanide Part 2
Operation Cyanide. If I heard about it, I heard so.
What was it?
I suggest we stop the interview here. What do you say? Why you want it? I am built so, and I know exactly what I am able to tell you, and I know exactly where I stop. And here I stop.
Why would you not be able to speak about Operation Cyanide?
Signature and loyalty to my country.
On June 8th, 1967, news spreads around the world which wasn't easy to believe.
Unknown attackers target a U.S. military ship in the Mediterranean Sea. After World War II, this was the first time someone had dared to attack the U.S. military. April 30th, 1945, when an all-out rivalry broke out between the Western Allies and the USSR to conquer Berlin, soldiers of the Red Army reached the heart of Nazi Germany sooner than the Americans. With the fall of the city and Adolf Hitler committing suicide, the flames of the horrendous Second War in Europe burnt out. All the death and destruction, as World War II was coming to an end, the two powerful conquerors could raise their flags on the mountains of soil and ashes and reorganize world order the way they wanted to. The Eastern powerhouse was the USSR, which had the dream of spreading the ideals of communism and saving the masses of the labor force from the oppression of capitalists. And on the other side, the wealthy Western powerhouse, meaning the U.S., was standing on the principles of using capital to create welfare. The USSR was doing everything in its power to entice the masses toward communist ideals and turn governments into its allies. When Gamal Abdel Nasser received word that Israeli forces had amassed on the Syrian border, he wasted no time. He immediately wrote to the UN and asked the organization to withdraw its peacekeeping forces, which had been stationed on the border of the neighboring countries from the previous war between Egypt and Israel. Nasser wanted to fill up the entire border Egypt had with this unwanted neighbor with his own military forces. It seemed the Soviets' plot for a war between the ideologies of the East and the West in the Middle East had really worked. Nasser took a further step, that putting his forces on standby and shut down the strategic straits of Tiran in the Gulf of Aqaba. The Straits of Tiran were the only waterway access Israel had with the eastern part of the world. The only passageway for the Israelis to import fuel had been shut down to the Zionists, and with this, war became inevitable. June 5th, 7 in the morning, 180 Israeli fighter jets flew towards Egypt. Only 12 fighter jets were left behind to defend the Israeli skies. Forty-five minutes later, Egypt's military airport runways were bombed and 280 Egyptian military jets on the ground were the targets of Israeli rockets. The Egyptians were so overwhelmingly surprised that they didn't even find the time to start their jet engines. The next target for Israeli fighter jets was Syria. 2 hours later, the Syrian Air Force was totally destroyed. And in only a few minutes, Jordan's Air Force had been dealt a heavy blow by Israeli fighters. This extraordinary surprise attack could not have been carried out without detailed intelligence superiority. On the Sinai Desert, where Egyptian and Israeli armored units had lined up against each other, the Egyptians had the upper hand in military force. Egypt had three times the number of tanks that the Israelis did, but there was no air cover to keep the Sinai sky safe for the Egyptians. The Egyptians had no option but to retreat. The orders to retreat in the Sinai Desert came from the office of General Abdul Hakim Amer, the Egyptian war minister. But there was no plan for it. The unplanned retreat of the Egyptians began, and the Israeli fighter jets used the opportunity the best they could and devastated the Egyptians. When the USSR realized that in a matter of hours, the balance of military power in the war in the Middle East had switched dramatically in favor of Israel, it gave 48 of its MiG fighter jets to fly from Ukraine to Armenia's naval base to prepare for an attack against Israel. On the other hand, the Kremlin activated the hotline between the U.S. and the USSR so that Kosygin's ultimatum could be delivered to Washington. The text contained the message that since the U.S. is Israel's supporter, we ask you to stop the continuation of Israel's aggression against Egyptian soil.
About 7:15, the telephone rang. It was the duty officer in the war room. Mr. Secretary, Prime Minister Kosygin's on the hotline. He wishes to speak to the president. Well, the president came on the line. He said, in effect, goddammit, Bob, what are you calling me for at this time in the morning? I said, Mr. President, Prime Minister Kosygin's on the hotline. How do you wish to respond?
Johnson didn't want the situation to turn into a military confrontation with the USSR. He immediately sent word to Moscow that with the help of the USSR and the UN, the U.S. will use any means to put an end to the war. The first day of war was nearing midday when, in a televised speech, Eshkol and King Hussein and the rest of the Arabs.
We appeal to King Hussein and to other neighbors to stay their hands. And Israel will do likewise.
But King Hussein didn't take the advice so seriously. Therefore, at 10:30 in the morning of the 5th of June, Al-Quds came under the attack of Jordan's artillery forces. But the Jordanians weren't able to do anything either, and the old city of Jerusalem, Al-Quds, which they had control of before the war, fell to the Israelis. The Six-Day War was in its third day as the main battle was taking place somewhere far from where the Arabs and Israelis were fighting, in the depths of the Mediterranean waters. The U.S. was unhappy about the USSR's dominance over the Middle East. To confront communism from spreading any more in the region, it was trying very hard to uncover the details of the relations the USSR had with Arabs in the Middle East. This motivated them to quietly snoop around the intelligence cables of Cairo and Moscow. But because it didn't want the issue to be revealed so that no one would find out about it, everyone else had to be busy dealing with another crisis. The third day of the war was reaching the evening when the Liberty reached the international waters in the north of Egypt and Israel, and it transmitted the initial news of Israel's victories and the conquest of the old city of Al-Quds to the NSA. But the question, which had kept the officers on board the Liberty busy, was why an unarmed military ship should be present in the vicinity of a conflict zone without an armed escort and be left all alone. The commander of the Liberty, Captain William McGonagall, asked this question from the commander of the U.S. Navy's 6th Fleet, which had retreated 100 miles from the region.
We were told there was no need to worry. We had asked Commander 6th Fleet for an armed guard to go along with us, a destroyer. He sent the message back saying we were in international waters, flying the American ensign. There was no need for an armed escort.
When Egypt and Jordan were removed from Israel's path, it was time for the Golan Heights on the border between Israel and Syria to come under the watchful eyes of the Israelis. 12 hours later, and with heavy fire of fighter jets and artillery forces, not only did the Syrians retreat from Israel's borders, but the Golan Heights were also occupied by the Israelis. A few kilometers away from the war zone, on the fourth day of the battle, the officers and crew of the Liberty had just woken up and were busy with their morning activities. A while later, several unknown planes got closer to the ship and encircled it many times to completely identify the ship. The planes didn't display any flags on their bodies, and the Liberty's crew wasn't able to identify which country they belonged to. But the recorded conversation of the pilot and watchtower shows that the planes had identified the Liberty well. A few hours later, when it was a few minutes past 2 p.m., three Mirage jets, which still didn't have the insignia of any country, got close to the Liberty and bombed the ship as much as they could with their rockets. But the main question was which side of the war may have attacked the Liberty, Egypt or Israel? As a wounded and astonished crew was thinking about the Egyptians don't even have Mirage jets, something else happened. 3 minutes later, unknown Mystere jets reached the Liberty and targeted the half-burned ship with a napalm bomb. When the Liberty was burning under the fire of attacking jets, three unannounced guests which were displaying the American flag were watching the events unfold from beneath the waters in the region and were informing the Pentagon of every single moment of what was happening. The telecommunications officers of the ship were trying their best to transmit news of the attack to the 6th Fleet and ask them for help. But the noise that the attack jets were sending on the Liberty's frequencies to transmit communications prevented the transfer of the messages.
Here's a question I have to ask. Who would know the frequencies other than an ally? And who was the ally in the war? It wasn't Egypt. It was Israel.
In the end, one of the Liberty's transmissions reached the USS America warship, and the commander of the ship issued orders for two U.S. fighter jets to take off to defend the Liberty.
So all of this happens. Think, all guys, help us. We're under attack. We're being engaged by torpedo boats and bombers and fighters, and we need your help. And they're locking down bulkheads and burning, and people are dying, and they're strafing lifeboats against the Geneva Convention and all rules of war and common sense and decency. Because they had to kill everybody. And McNamara comes on and says, you will not launch a wing. We're not going to do that.
But as soon as word reached the White House that the jets had taken off to defend the Liberty, the defense secretary sent an urgent message to the 6th Fleet and asked the commander of the fleet to immediately return his jets back to the warship without asking any questions. Since Admiral Gates was shocked by this strange order, he contacted Washington to remind them that an American warship is under fire by unknown planes and asked why he shouldn't act to support the ship. In the end, He told McNamara to implement such strange order and return the jets which had taken off to support the Liberty. He needed orders from a more superior position. This time, President Johnson spoke and told Geist that he wanted that damn ship to sink and had no intentions in upsetting his ally. Order the jets to fly back, he said.
The admiral ignores it, and they go ahead and launch the wings. They're not calling them back. They've been launched. And then all of a sudden, over the radio line comes the telephone call, patched in, it's the president. I want that going to the bottom. That's a quote.
But when even the witnesses to the event didn't know whether the attacks were being carried out by the Egyptians or the Israelis, how did Johnson know that the fighter jets belonged to his friends and ally Israel? Sometime later, Johnson, accompanied by McNamara and the Secretary of State, Dean Rusk, and a number of the government's advisors, gathered in the White House's Situation Room to come to the conclusion that the party to blame for the crisis is Egypt. Therefore, this time, the hotline between Washington and Moscow was activated by the White House. The message was, a U.S. warship has been attacked by unknown fighter planes in international waters in the north of Egypt, and the only suspect in this attack is the ally of the USSR, meaning Egypt. The White House wants to respond to this attack with a nuclear attack on Cairo. The orders for the attack reached the Sixth Fleet. Without wasting any time, three U.S. fighter jets were equipped with nuclear weapons and flew toward the Egyptian capital. Word of an inevitable attack on Cairo reached Richard Parker, the U.S. political consul in Cairo, first.
There was this message that the Navy was preparing to retaliate against Egypt for the attack on the Liberty. They thought that it was the Egyptians who attacked it. They were preparing to attack Egypt in response.
It was 2:30 p.m. when three Israeli torpedo boats got close to the half-burnt Liberty and fired five torpedoes at it. One of them hit the middle of the ship and created a huge hole in its starboard side. Due to the torpedo attacks, the ship's propulsive forces stopped working, and the transmitting systems were totally destroyed. At the same time that U.S. jets armed with nuclear weapons were on the way to Cairo, Robert McNamara, the U.S. Defense Secretary, contacted the USS America of the Sixth Fleet so he could deliver another strange order to the commander of the ship. McNamara asked Geist to immediately recall the jets which were en route to Cairo. Early next morning, the USS America, USS Davis, and USS Massey arrived to remove the 34 dead sailors and 174 naval officers from the burnt-down Liberty and transfer the warship to Malta for repairs. An hour later, Admiral Isaac Kidd, who was put in charge of investigating the Liberty incident, arrived on the scene to hear what the victims had to say so he can offer a written report to his superiors. After the suspicious Liberty incident, word of the bizarre Israeli attack on the U.S. warship spread around the world. Israelis claimed they'd mistaken the Liberty with the Egyptian ship Al-Qusair. This is while the Al-Qusair was a retired cargo ship and wasn't even half the size of the USS Liberty.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
In the United States, Rudy Giuliani has been hit with ethics charges over baseless claims he made about the 2020 presidential election being stolen while serving as an attorney for former President Donald Trump. The charges come a day after a primetime hearing by the House panel investigating the Capitol attack. The article you're about to hear has been written by staff at the Reuters news agency. The piece is titled, Rudy Giuliani Charged with Ethical Misconduct Over Trump's Big Lie. In the United States, Rudy Giuliani has been hit with ethics charges over baseless claims he made about the 2020 presidential election being stolen while serving as an attorney for former President Donald Trump. The charges were filed on Friday, 10th of June, by the District of Columbia office that polices attorneys for ethical misconduct. The Washington, D.C. Office of Disciplinary Counsel alleges that Rudy Giuliani, who is a member of the D.C. Bar, made baseless claims in federal court filings about the results of the 2020 presidential election in Pennsylvania. The charges were filed with the District of Columbia Court of Appeals Board on professional responsibility. A lawyer for Rudy Giuliani did not have an immediate comment. The charges come a day after the U.S. House Select Committee investigating the January 6th Capitol attack had its first primetime hearing, in which it outlined evidence that Donald Trump and his allies sought to overturn the 2020 election and incite throngs of Trump supporters to block Congress from certifying Joe Biden's victory. Giuliani, a former U.S. attorney in Manhattan and a former mayor of New York City, has been among Donald Trump's most fervent supporters and repeatedly claimed without evidence that the election had been stolen. The complaint says Rudy Giuliani sought an emergency order to prohibit the certification of the presidential election, an order to invalidate ballots cast by certain voters in seven counties, and other orders that would have permitted the state's assembly to choose its electors and declare Trump the winner in Pennsylvania. The charges say his conduct violated two professional conduct rules in Pennsylvania that bar attorneys from bringing frivolous proceedings without a basis in law or fact and prohibit conduct that is prejudicial to the administration of justice. These charges against Rudy Giuliani can lead to the suspension of a license to practice law or disbarment. The charges mark the second time that a bar office has taken action against Rudy Giuliani. His New York law license was suspended in June of 2021 after a state appeals court found that Giuliani made demonstrably false and misleading statements that widespread voter fraud undermined the election. Apart from having two of his law licenses suspended, Giuliani's reputation has been stained by his dealings with Ukraine, and he is being investigated by Manhattan federal prosecutors over those business ties with Ukraine. He began representing Donald Trump, a fellow Republican and New Yorker, in April of 2018, in connection with then special counsel Robert Mueller's investigation that documented Russian interference in the 2016 presidential election. Rudy Giuliani has not been charged with criminal wrongdoing. His lawyer has said the federal investigation is politically motivated. Meanwhile, Thursday's opening session of primetime televised hearings into storming of Capitol Hill on 6th of January 2021 was both revealing and disturbing. The revelations of what exactly took place when a violent mob broke into the halls of U.S. Congress seeking to overturn a Democratic election by preventing the formal certification of Joe Biden's victory are a valuable and shocking addition to the historical record. The House of Representatives Committee that has been investigating the attempted insurrection for the past year, gathering in excess of 140,000 documents and speaking to more than 1,000 witnesses, discovered that Donald Trump's response on learning that the rioters were chanting, "Hang Mike Pence," his vice president was to say that his vice president deserved it. Previously unseen video footage and fresh testimony buried the suggestion made by one Republican congressman that the behavior of the insurrectionists on 6th of January 2021 was like a normal tourist visit, or that it was, as Fox News' most watched host, Tucker Carlson, was still insisting on Thursday, no more than a forgettable minor outbreak of violence. Instead, one police officer, Caroline Edwards, who suffered a traumatic brain injury as the Capitol was breached on 6th of January 2021, described being stampeded, knocked unconscious, pepper sprayed and tear gassed by the rioters. There was so much blood on the floor, she slipped over. It was carnage, she said. It was chaos.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really in fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing of our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. You're listening to the program Islamic Upbringing. In this program, we come up with the solutions of your problems, questions, and issues you have regarding the Islamic upbringing of your children. The answers are based upon the Noble Quran and the narrations of Prophet Muhammad, may peace be upon him, and his purified progeny. Well, today to provide you with those very beautiful tips based on Quran and narrations, We have with us in the studio our guest speaker, who is a world-famous speaker and Islamic researcher. Yes, she is none other, Razia Batul Najafi. Assalamu alaikum, sister.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah. Thank you so much for having me here in this beautiful discussion.
Thank you so much for coming, despite your busy schedule. Sister, so today, what we are going to discuss is that in a bedtime, what we have seen in most of the societies is that children, especially the youngsters, are often used to listen to music and then they fall asleep. But what is the Islamic way of like bedtime? I would want to ask you.
Oh yeah, I love to take some lessons from the beautiful history of Lady Fatima al-Zahra, salamullahi alayha.
Yes.
And our teacher as
our
a beautiful
model.
Mother, a role model, as a mother. Yeah, she is Ummul A'imma, the mother of A'imma alayhi salam. So we can learn a lot from this amazing institute of Lady Fatima al-Zahra, salamullah alayha. I love it, the way she used to sing some rhymes for her children. Can
All
you
right.
believe it? You know how advanced, how modern approach she had. Like literally we have some poems which she used to rhymely recite for her children. Like she would say to Imam Hassan alayhi salam, أشبه أباك يا حسن واخلع عن الحق يا رسن. Oh my son Hassan, you are just like your father. You
All
know,
right.
You're so much familiar and resemble to your father. واخلع عن الحق يا رسن. All the obstacles which people have made to reach towards the truth and haq, just you have to remove those obstacles.
All right.
So she's encouraging them.
Providing
yeah.
strength to the children.
Yeah.
And showing that your father is a power. Like
Beautiful.
Showing the deep respect for her husband. And that too in a rhymic way.
No, yeah, no doubt. Because as a boys, they love to be, you know, like their father, powerful
Courageous,
and strong.
Yeah.
And one hadith we have that Jibreel, the great angel, he used to recite this lullaby for Imam Hussein alayhi salam.
All right.
And this lullaby is very famous, which
All
says,
right.
Inna fil jannati nahran min laban li'aliyin wa husaynin wa hasan. In Jannah, in paradise, there is a beautiful river. Inna fil jannati nahran. A river of milk. This river is exclusively for Imam Hassan, Imam Ali, Imam Hussein, and Ahlul Bayt, and the lovers of Ahlul Bayt.
All right.
So look at the meanings are so profound.
Yeah.
And it shows that even about in the hadith, like this is the hadith.
Yeah.
But
in a rhymic way.
Exactly. I think, yeah, we need it. I don't know why we are lacking in this area.
All right.
Nowadays, everyone loves music, rhymes, and rhythms, and tune. And, you know, these all are so beautiful techniques. But we are not using it, especially as a mother. The lullabies of mothers are very famous in every culture. So we, as a followers of the culture of Lady Fatima, we can just adopt this amazing technique of teaching of Lady Fatima Zahra Salamullah Alayha.
That was such a beautiful technique. I think hardly we know about that. I would be talking to you, sister, but after a short break.
This is Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Contact us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. We're talking about Islamic upbringing of your children in the program Islamic Upbringing. Yes, sister, we're talking about the bedtime upbringing. For example, I said, in many of the Western cultures, or even in many of the like Asian cultures today, we have kids, we have youngsters going to bed by listening to music. They have these headphones or headsets in their ears, and they are listening to music, and then they feel like they'll be going to sleep. But what actually this culture is inducing into them, don't you think that's loneliness? Because you said Lady Fatima salamu alayha used to come and give time to their children, recite rhymes for them. But what we are doing, providing headsets to our children, don't you think we are making them feel more lonely?
No doubt, no doubt. And, you know, in one hand, we are taking care of them. We are showing our utmost love and care. But
spending money.
Yeah. But on the other hand, we are just demolishing and destroying their, you know, inner peace.
All
because
right.
It's something, I can say, this is a pollution, you know, like, You get the polluted environment and mindset, and you can't believe it. Even scientists, they say, you are not allowed to ask your children to go to the bed with a very harsh mood.
Tune,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah. Like if I say, go to the bed, tomorrow you have a school, it's already 10 p.m., it's too late, you have exam, you have this, so much tension, go.
So is there any Islamic way how we can teach them this? Yeah. Because you have been talking about beautiful Islamic ways on that note.
So Islam says the last wording which you are communicating with your child should be divine. That would be the fantastic one. Therefore, we have a chapter Mulk.
All right.
And I have made some rhymes that Mulki boys, Mulki girls, and how the Mulki boys, Mulki means from that Surah Mulk.
Yeah.
That how the Surah number 68.
Surah Mulk, yeah. Actually, yeah.
So inshallah, next time I will bring my poem, which my friends have written for me, that Surah number 68 with number we play a lot. So it shows that, okay, we have a beautiful method of sleeping in Islamic teaching, you know,
right.
like how, what should be our last thing to think and wordings to speak. So in a very polite and happy mood, we should make our children to go to their beds. That is really important. Therefore, some parents, they have a special bookshelf, just those books they can read before going to bed, the books which give them so much, you know, peace. Yeah,
of
not
mind.
Horrible, you know,
horrible
novels
kind of,
and stories. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So parents need to definitely give time to their children, and the last thing parents say to their children before going to bed is a goodbye in a very good mood, not in a harsh tone.
And can you believe it? We have hadith that if you perform a wuzu, yeah, so inshallah we'll talk after the break. Yeah,
yeah, of course. I am just showing that we have break.
Yeah.
We'll be talking after a very short break.
The Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sallam said, "The best among you is he who learns the Quran and teaches it."
Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. We're talking about Islamic upbringing issues, and sister, you're talking about bedtime upbringing.
Yeah. We as a parents, we are so lucky. We have three times. One is bedtime, one is meal time, and one is prayer time.
Wow.
So even once in a day, we can eat together, definitely. Once in a day, we can pray together, definitely.
Right.
And definitely, we go to sleep once in a day. So at night. So these three times are really crucial, beautiful opportunities for parents, how to design, how to make them full to influence our children. So one is, I love the way Islam says, you know, the way when you want to go on your prayer mat,
all
to
right.
pray, you have to perform wuzu. The same way, before going to your bed, you have to perform wuzu. Why? This is the beauty of Islam. What Islam says? Islam says that when you are performing wuzu, wuzu means a beautiful shield which gives you that protection from the whisperings of evil shaitan, and you will not have that, you know, negative attacks and confusion and all those stress. So I just love it. So I love the way Hadith says you can change your bed into masjid.
Wow.
Yeah, by just performing the wuzu.
All right.
So you perform wuzu, you just sleep, you can snore, but angels are just worshiping on behalf of you. That's all a right. beauty. Yeah.
Wow, that's so beautiful. That means we just have to perform a simple wuzu and we are turning our bed into a mosque. That was so beautiful. And you just have to sleep throughout the night. You're making angels work for you. You're making
exactly.
them do jobs for you, worship for you, yeah. like to make du'as for you.
That the way so you're beautiful. Talking, yeah, if a mother talk like that to her child, you know how much change she can bring, yeah? So that kind of parenting we need.
Yeah, definitely. So you said that there are some beautiful rhymes, rather, we can say to our children to wake up very early in the morning. So is there any beautiful line that you can use to, like, maybe in Arabic, maybe in English, maybe in another language, which you can tell your children to wake up early in the morning?
Yeah.
Because there's this thing, you know, we want them to wake up early in the morning. So what is the best way to tell them wake up in the morning?
Yeah, so because they want to go to the school, yeah, so it's not necessary to put them in pressure and say, hey, wake up, you're getting late. You just sing this beautiful hadith that talibul ilmi habibullah, talibul ilmi ruknul Islam. So you are the habib and friend of Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala because you are the seeker of knowledge.
Wow.
So let's go as a talib ilm towards the school, just back, you know, take your backpack and run for this beautiful journey.
That was so beautiful. Thank you so much, sister, for being with us. Thank you so much to your listeners. You are listening to IRIB English Radio. If you have any questions, comments, or suggestions, please contact us at englishradio@irib.ir. You can also find us on the social media platforms by searching Call of Islam Radio. Until another session, fi amanillah and God bless you all.
Do you know what Islam says? It says that life's the greatest test. It says that life's a borrowed space, returned upon rest. A way of life, a way of life, a way of life, a way of life. Islam is a way of life, a complete way. Islam solves all of our problems. Allah leaves no stone unturned. Perfect with no flaws at all are the laws of Allah. A way of life, a way of life, a way of life, a way of life. Islam is a way of life, a complete way.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 25 meters, 11,865 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent. And FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.